This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Tony Cox in Washington. Here are the headlines from some of the stories we're following today here at NPR News. Acknowledging that economic growth has slowed in recent weeks, the Federal Reserve said it will use money from its investments in mortgage bonds to buy government debt. That could help encourage lending by lowering rates on mortgages and corporate debt. Some economists, however, say that won't have a huge impact on stimulating growth. The Fed said it now believes that economic growth will be more modest than it had previously anticipated. New York Congressman Charles Rangel is defending himself against charges that he violated ethics rules. The veteran Democrat told his colleagues in the House today that he is not resigning despite the 13 charges against him. He acknowledged he made mistakes in belatedly reporting assets and income, but insisted that he is not corrupt. The House is meeting in a special session today to vote on a jobs bill. Details on these stories and more are coming up on All Things Considered from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about Ramadan, specifically what we don't know about the holy month. In what ways do you observe Ramadan? Call us and tell us here in Washington at 800-989-8255. The email address talk@npr.org. And to join the conversation, go to our website, npr.org, and click on Talk of the Nation. Well, as we said, Ramadan begins this week, and we are just now being joined by Vali Nasser, who joins me here in Studio 3A. He is a professor of international politics at Tufts University's Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy and author of The Rise of Islamic Capitalism, Why the New Muslim Middle Class is the Key to Defeating Extremism. I thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let's start at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Ramadan is what?
Ramadan is one of the articles of the Islamic faith, which means that 1 month in a year, Muslims are to fast from dawn to dusk and avoid eating, drinking, having sex, engaging in fighting, saying bad things, having bad thoughts. It's a period of is dedicated to God. It's a period of spiritual reflection. It's a period of imposing discipline on one's desires, most basic desires and wants, which is hunger and thirst. And it's an important part of the Muslim religious calendar. It rotates because it's counted by lunar. It's a lunar month.
It doesn't always start on the same calendar date.
Exactly. It moves by 11 days every year. So throughout one's lifetime, it goes from summer to winter and passes through all the seasons.
And when does it begin this year?
It begins actually tomorrow, depending on observation of the new moon, because as I said, it's a lunar month. So it starts when the new moon is seen, and then it ends also when a new moon is seen. So it's a 28-day cycle.
28 days, 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
The first thing that you note in your foreign policy piece about the holiday, is it right to call it a holiday or a holiday period, or is that not right?
In American thinking, we think of it as a holiday because that's the way we associate religious, important religious dates as holidays. It's not a holiday in the sense that life goes on. The last day of the holy month, which is Eid al-Fitr, is a holiday, mm-hmm. and there are periods in between that are holidays, but as a whole, it's not a holiday.
Now, one of the things that the point I was trying to make was, you say that a Ramadan is not about quietly sitting at home in prayer, which people might think that that's what it is because of the fasting and because of the, you know, the change in behavior, but it's not necessarily that, is it?
No, but more people go to mosques more frequently, sometimes every afternoon or every day during this month, because it's a month that Muslims believe that they're closer to God. So it's a month of reflection. It's a month of prayer and spirituality, but life goes on. So, you know, people are still supposed to be working, tending shops, going to offices, etc., even though in practice, because of the hunger and thirst and fatigue, they do less work.
Now, you mentioned, though, that in terms of the spending that takes place mm-hmm. during Ramadan, it is second only to Christmas.
Well, first of all, we're talking about 1.3 billion Muslims the world over, literally one-fifth of humanity, and this is an important month to them. They fast during the day, but they also break the fast usually in large events. They get together with family, with friends. It's often a feast. They invite people to their homes, and they also go out a lot after the fast breaks, and they spend differently than they do the rest of the year.
How so?
For instance, they eat, the countries of New Zealand and Australia have a spike in their export of lamb, because that's a favorite dish, particularly in the Middle East, and more of it is consumed because a lot of events happen. If you live in an Arab country, on any day in Ramadan, you may be invited to 6 or 7 different breaking fast events, parties,
really?
Get-togethers.
All in the evenings, I'm
all
assuming.
In the evenings.
All right, let's take a call. This is Sadiq, I believe I'm saying that correctly, from Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome.
How you doing, Tony? Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm a practicing Muslim, and I try to observe the holy month of Ramadan by doing some reflecting and asking for forgiveness and trying to better myself to be a better person for humanity. You know, since we believe that humanity is one and God is one, we're just trying to be better humans, working for the whole of humanity. And that's the essence of what a Muslim should be doing during this time of the year.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. Let's get another call. This is Fatima in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. I greatly enjoy listening to your show.
Thank you.
I do thank you for having, for explaining to the rest of the community in the United States what Ramadan is, and to actually tell the real truth about Ramadan, and that it's not something that they may have just heard about over the media. But we celebrate it as a family. Every day, like your guest said, we get together over somebody's house within the family. I have a large extended family here, and we try to show the kids that this is not only fasting about food and drink, it's also trying to be a good Muslim, like your previous caller said, not to lie, because lying also breaks your fast, to present a very good person as a human being to others in the community, to try to be a good Muslim and to explain what Ramadan is, because there's a lot of people that are non-Muslims that do not know what the month may represent.
Thank you very much for that call. Valley, I'm going to ask you about mm-hmm. Westerns, people in the West. Is celebrating Ramadan a correct expression?
Yes.
Practicing it or something?
No,
celebrating is right.
Celebrating is right.
I want to ask you about that, but I want to take one more call and come back to that. This is Sam from Dearborn, Michigan. Sam, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you. And to your Muslim guest speaker, Ramadan Mubarak, wassalamu alaikum.
Thank you.
One of the ways that I guess I observe or commemorate Ramadan as a bachelor in kind of a unique situation that I'm not married at my age, and that is kind of a peculiar paradox being in the Muslim community, because in our faith, marriage is considered half the faith. But I more typically observe the fast and start the fast. I will be starting it at dawn tomorrow as a bachelor, and I do not have family around me. So I tend to observe the fast and break the fast every night during Ramadan on my own. And I know that is not as spiritually enriching as being around other Muslims or family members, but my situation just doesn't allow that, perhaps, for practical purposes. But what I'd like to ask your guest is, when you're practicing the faith and you're observing the reason Ramadan it implies so much to me is, number one, it's an opportunity and it's a thanksgiving and it's really a gift from God, because he's allowed you to observe and to live through another month of Ramadan, which is a month of blessing, a month of forgiveness, and a month of repentance. What I'd like to ask your guest as an expert or as a teacher of Islam is the fast really just as fulfilling or spiritually acceptable to God if you're doing it on your own and you're more or less breaking your fast in the evening on your own as a bachelor? And it is a month of reflection, and I really enjoy it in the sense that it offers me a chance to regain or reestablish some humility.
Well, Sam, let him give you an answer to your question. Okay. Don't go away, because he may have a follow-up for you. What about what Sam is asking?
Well, it's obviously very good to be able to share the blessings of the month, Muslims believe, with others, but there is no impact on the effect that it has on a person if it's done alone. After all, the discipline, the introspection, the reflection that goes with Ramadan is supposed to enrich one's a person and to bring him closer to God, and that is first and foremost an individual act, and then it's a social act.
Well, Sam, it sounds like you're on the right track.
Well, thank you. And one other point I'd like to bring up is, I think it's important, too, for Muslims during the month of Ramadan to observe the fast not only by not taking water or food during the day, but to also offer a fast of the eyes, a fast of the tongue, but in other words, to put your best foot forward really as an ambassador for Islam, so that those non-Muslims who do come in contact with them and they want to learn more about Ramadan or what it's about, they observe a change in your behavior to the point where it's better than what they've normally observed, and hopefully it's always good.
All right, Sam, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sam, for that. Sam and the other two callers mm-hmm. before him bring up a point that I want to ask you, Vali Nasser, about, and it's this. Aspects of Ramadan can be challenging for Muslims living in Western countries, and Sam was just one example of trying to make it fit, and therefore people are surrounded by people eating all of the time. How difficult is it to practice or to celebrate Ramadan if you're living in the United States or in another country where it is not widely understood?
It clearly makes it more challenging because you don't have the cultural milieu that you have in the Muslim world where the entire country or the entire society is essentially observing the same thing. Nobody eats in front of you. You know that you'll be participating, whether alone or with your family, in the same activity. The West provides many challenges. One is this, that often if you don't live in some place like Dearborn, Michigan, or in an area where you have a lot of Muslims, that you have to observe this on your own. And it's a lonely feeling. It puts more pressure. The weather is also a challenge. The hour of the day is a challenge. In the Muslim world, it is much more closer to the equator, so the difference of hours between night and day is not very long.
The daytime is not as long as what you're saying?
It's not as long. If you live in Sweden or if you live in Nova Scotia or in parts of Canada, you can have, at this time of the year, essentially white nights, which means the hours of the night are very short. When you have like days in summer in the West, in the United States, where you have 100 plus degree heat, and you still have to work like everybody else. It's not like in the Middle East, where at least people take the afternoon off and it's fairly accepted. It is challenging.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Another question about Ramadan. Are there symbols? Christmas has a symbol in America, the tree, decorations. Easter has a symbol. Does Ramadan have any materialistic symbols associated with it?
No, it doesn't have any specific symbol as such, largely because the month is characterized by practices rather than a certain symbol. So it's the regiment of the day that is really the symbol.
What would you say? We have another call we're going to get to. In fact, let's take that call, then I'm going to ask you another question. Michael joins us from Sunset Beach, North Carolina. Hello, Michael.
Hi. How are you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just have a question about Ramadan and its fasting practices. I lived in West Africa for 3 years in a 95% Muslim country, and I noticed was working there every year. When it came to that period of time, the workforce or the work, I guess, level really diminished. People, you know, because of the fasting, were tired, very lethargic, didn't really want to do anything. A lot of the times, you know, with this fasting, people aren't even swallowing their spit. So I was wondering if that's the same type of extreme fasting that takes place through most countries, or was this just unique to this one country that I lived in?
Michael, thank you very much for that. So, Vali, what's the answer?
Well, the fasting does tax the body, and it's customary in most Muslim countries that probably the time period between the afternoon and the evening, people rest, they don't go out, they may pray, and then life comes alive at nighttime. I mean, you go out in nighttime in Cairo or Beirut or Damascus, and until late hours of the evening, the entire cities come alive with cafes, shops open. There's a lot of activity happens there. But, you know, if you're in sub-Saharan Africa when the weather is extremely hot and Ramadan happens to be during the summer, it is taxing.
Here's an email, and there's another question also. The email, what do diabetics do for the celebration? How about competitive Islamic athletes? Changes in dietary habits of elite athletes can have severe impact on performance. This comes from Daniel in Ithaca. And as a matter of fact, to Daniel's point, there is a player in the National Football League, Hussein Abdullah, who just announced that he will continue with preseason practice without drinking water during the day. Does anyone get a complete pass from fasting?
Well, the fasting is incumbent, first of all, on people of a certain age and above who are not sick, who are not infirm, and also who are not traveling beyond a certain distance. In other words, the idea is not to put physical pressure on people who cannot handle fasting. So, you know, in the old times, people, whenever you went beyond 6-7 miles, you were forbidden from fasting. If you're sick, like you're a diabetic person, you're not supposed to be fasting. If you're very old, if fasting in any way is a threat to your health, you're not supposed to be fasting.
Let me ask you this, because this is an interesting question that we got. What if you slip up? Okay, you make a mistake and you eat during the day, or you drink during the day. Which I'm assuming is a sin, then are you able to atone in any way? Do you have to start over again? What do you do?
Well, it's not a sin. It's that your fast is broken. So, you know, you can always make up for it. You can do additional days of fasting outside of the month. And even sometimes people who happen to be sick during Ramadan, for instance, they have the influenza or they are sick, and they can't fast, say, for 6-7 days, they often try to make it up after at other times in the year. The only day in the year that you really are forbidden from fasting is the last day of Ramadan, which is the Eid al-Fitr. Any other day of the year, you can make up for what you lost during Ramadan.
Our time is up, and I wanted to know what the word Ramadan means, but I don't know if there's enough time for you to answer it really quickly.
It's the name of the month, essentially.
Ramadan.
Ramadan is the name of the month.
Vali Nasser is a professor of international politics at Tufts University and author of The Rise of Islamic Capitalism, Why the New Muslim Middle Class is the Key to Defeating Extremism. You can find a link to his article, Ramadan, the Geopolitics of the World's Other Biggest Holiday, on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Vali, thank you very much. It was interesting.
Thank you for inviting me.
A plane carrying 9 people crashed in a remote area of Alaska last night, killing 5 people on board, including former Alaska Senator Ted Stevens. Stay tuned on NPR for NPR News to get more on that story. Talk of the Nation is produced by John Asante, April Failing, Dahlia Martinez, Ben Timshin, Lori Grant, and Sarah Handel. Sarah also handles our web content. Our editor is Tanya Ballard Brown. Our intern is Jalen Lassick. Gwen Uten directs the program. Drew Reynolds is our technical director. He gets engineering help from Neil Tivalt, Dennis Nielsen, Burke Hun, and Neil Ellis. Talk of the Nation's theme music was composed by Greg Smith. Talk of the Nation's supervising senior producer is Carlene Watson. Sue Goodwin is the executive producer. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox in Washington. Neil Conan will be back tomorrow.